I'm going to talk about the C equal to 1 matrix model and C hat equal to 1 matrix model. So 10 years ago, people studied a lot the bosonic version of this model. And so let me try to summarize some of the aspects that were discussed then. So the idea is that if you start with some gauge theory or some large n, if you start with some matrix, some theory that has matrices, so the transform under un have two indices. So in the large n limit, you can compute the Feynman diagrams for such things. And in the large n limit, the leading contribution will be planar diagrams. And they can be thought of as a given a discretization of some two-dimensional surface. More precisely, you can go to some this so-called double scaling limit, where there is an infinite number of diagrams that contribute, and so this so the in that limit the wall sheet becomes continuous. So this discretized wall sheet becomes continuous because there's an infinite number of diagrams that contributes. And that is supposed to give some description of two-dimensional quantum gravity. So this two-dimensional quantum gravity that is described by Liouville theory. So the simplest model would just be a matrix integral that gives this Liouville theory. And then if you start having, let's say, two matrices, or you increase the number of matrices, you can get more. You basically get more variables on this fishnet diagram. And in that way, you can have two-dimensional gravity plus some extra fields that propagate on the surface. In particular, if you take a chain of matrices, so an infinite chain of matrices that are coupled to the nearest neighbors, then you get essentially at each side you get a field variable which tells you, well, where you are here. And in the string theory side, you get Liouville plus one scalar field. So here on the string side, we have this Liouville theory. It's a theory whose wall sheet action is equal to, well, d phi squared plus mu e to the phi. And the scalar field is just a free scalar field. So we have this action on the world sheet. And C equal to 1 here refers to the fact that this is just one field that has central charge equal to 1. And this has central charge 25, so that the whole thing has central charge 26. And we have a critical string theory. Okay, so here the double scaling limit that you need to take is such that in the end, you are left with in the matrix model side, you are left with a matrix integral, which which has this form. So this is in the Lorentzian signature. And this is saying that we have an inverted harmonic oscillator potential. And we OK, so I need to explain one more thing. So you can treat this matrix theory by sort of diagonalizing the matrix. So then you have a theory in terms of the eigenvalues, lambda 1, lambda n. It was shown that these eigenvalues then become fermions. What happens is that when you diagonalize, there are some van der Mond determinants. And these van der Mond determinants will imply that the wave function is anti-symmetric. And for that reason, these eigenvalues become fermions. So in the end, you have a system of n free fermions that are moving in this potential. And so you need to fill the Fermi C. So if you have some arbitrary potential here, minus V of m, so you would have your potential. And then you start filling. And if you have up to n, so you'll fill up to here. So you fill all the levels of this potential. And you can take a double scaling limit where or a scaling limit where this you only keep the quadratic portion of the potential, and you just fill up to some distance mu from the top, and you fill only one side, and this mu that appears here in the matrix model is to be identified with the cosmological constant that appears in the string theory. Okay, so this is the story that, well, this was known 10 years ago. And here, whenever dealing with this, we have to keep in mind that there are three different pictures, so that, and we should understand everything from these three different pictures. One is the matrix model, the other is the worldsheet, this worldsheet Lagrangian, and the third is the space-time theory. So here we have, this is the worldsheet action, and describes strings propagating on a two-dimensional background that is described by the variables x and phi. And so this two-dimensional background has the features that we have this Liouville direction phi, and we have that Liouville. This Liouville potential implies that strings that come in from this side will be eventually reflected back to infinity. So basically, we have the physics is like the physics of a half line. So we could, in string theory, we could compute scattering amplitudes, let's say, from this wall. It's also important that there is a linear dilaton, so there is a dilaton phi, which is equal to, well, these are two different phis, so this is Liouville direction. So here we have weak coupling, and here we have strong coupling. So the Liouville wall is avoiding the propagation of the string into the strong coupling direction. Okay, now, okay, so now we, yeah, the space-time metric is just flat. Oh yeah, the x direction is time-like, this one is time-like, okay. And phi is space-like. So the time direction is just completely flat. There is no, and the metric is trivial. All the non-trivial action is in the phi direction. And the spectrum of this string theory contains only one massless field, which is the closed string tachyon. So the tachyon, which is normally tachyonic for 26 dimensions, in two dimensions is massless. Okay, so now, well, one of the main, one interesting lesson that was learned from the matrix model is that there are effects that go like e to the 1 over the coupling, so that there are d-brains. And this was, well, one of the, I guess, well, was a very nice lesson from the matrix model. And so now we'll go back to the matrix model and analyze d-brains in the matrix model. So a lot has been learned about d-brains in 10 to the 6 dimensions. So we'll try to understand some aspects, go back to this and see, well, what were these d-brains that Steve Schenker was talking about. So first, I should say there are two kinds of d-brains. One kind of d-brain was already, in a sense, known in the 90s, which is the d-brain that is extended in the phi direction. So this is the so-called FCC d-brain. Faiev, Samolochikov, and Teschner discussed how to do computations, exact computations in Liouville theory with these brains. And these are brains that are extended in the phi direction. So in phi, so they are extended in phi, and they can have a boundary cosmological constant. So on the boundary, you can add a term mu b e to the phi over 2. And so there is one parameter associated to these d-brains, which is this mu b. And so these are d-brains that were known as sort of so-called macroscopic loops, and they correspond to inserting an operator, which is trace log mu b plus m in the matrix model. This was derived by sort of analyzing the surfaces directly.
This is a d-brain. Could it be zero going?
Right. So, yeah, exactly. So this is a D0 brain. It's described for C1 or less than 1. And yeah, but when you think of this as an operator, this operator is inserted at some particular x, some particular time. It's localizing. It's localizing the Minkowski in time. Yeah, that's exactly. Yeah. Now, of course.
Pretty exponential. I mean, this is the thing. This is the local operator.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and it sits at the particular x. It's localized in the time direction. Okay. Now the new kind of brain that was found recently was the so-called CC brain by Samolochiko and Samolochiko. And we see this is Schenker's brain, so the one that. okay, so this is a new object. So this is basically a deep brain that is localized in phi. So it obeys essentially Dirichlet boundary conditions in phi. However, you cannot put phi equal to some constant. So this is not a good boundary condition because under conformal transformations, due to the fact that there is a linear dilaton, phi will shift. So this is not a good boundary condition except if this is equal to infinity. So if it's equal to infinity, then it's a fine boundary condition because while you shift. Sorry? Yeah, you can have it time dependent. That's right. So you could. You could imagine that. Those were not found yet, but yeah. So from the, yeah, that's right. So this is from the point of view of the world sheet. We need this. From the point of view of space-time, what happens is that we have a linear dilaton, and the tension of the brain is 1 over the string coupling, and the brain will want to move to the region where the string coupling is biggest, so where this is minimum, and that is the phi going to infinity region there. So.
It ends up with a finite tension by balancing some exponential constant.
Right. Well, in principle, yeah. So it's not. We don't understand exactly how this happens, mm-hmm. but yeah, it's supposed to get a finite tension. And the way this essentially could work is that there could be here some function of the tachyon. So in the effective action, there could be a function of the tachyon such that it cancels this term. Right. So the tension naively is zero, but you could get something finite from this. So if you naively put here 1 plus t, this gives you the right answer. But, well, why aren't there other corrections? I don't know.
But the exact
boundary
state, you can compute the tension.
Yeah, that's right. We'll do some computations that amount to that. Okay, so that's that. And okay, so now this CC brain.
Sorry, is it defined by the boundary condition? I just trying to understand exactly how the brain is defined. In the previous case, it was defined by an operator.
Right. So if you read the Samolochiko paper, they somehow define it by bootstrap. They find that these brains obey all the conditions that should be obeyed. So they find the one-point function, two-point functions, etc. Yes. G string is equal to e to the phi. Are you asking about this coefficient? Phi is the Liouville. Sorry. This is not the dilaton. This is the Liouville direction. So, what is t? T is the tachyon. So the tachyon. sorry. Yeah. So this is t. Okay. That's the tachyon. Okay, so if you set this kind of boundary conditions, and then you try to find the solution for Liouville theory, so that what that would be is you are doing the disk diagram, and you're trying to find the worksheet that minimizes the disk diagram. So in the bulk of the worksheet is pushed towards the weak coupling region, and in the boundary, well, we have this boundary condition that is at infinity, so you can find the classical solution. And that classical solution, is E. So it has this form. And if you view this as a two-dimensional quantum gravity theory, then you would say that the physical metric is e to the phi times, well, dc squared. And this is the metric of the hyperbolic disk. So that's why, what? R is the distance from the center of the disk. So it's R is the absolute value of C, or, well, the worksheet coordinate. OK. So that's why some Samolochikov called this the Liouville theory on the hyperbolic disk, or Euclidean ADS2. Now, they also found what the open string spectrum is. And the open string spectrum contains a tachyon. So open strings contain a tachyon. And this is a real tachyon. So this is not like this massless tachyon. This is a real tachyon with m squared equal to minus 1 over alpha prime. Okay. Now, this mass of the tachyon is precisely the same as the curvature on top of that potential. So you can, from when people computed these scattering amplitudes, they found that, well, the curvature of the potential is 1 over alpha prime. And that's precisely this. So this is suggesting that, well, this is saying that we should think of this D-brain as an eigenvalue sitting on top of the potential. OK. Now, so one remark here. People computed this, the potential for the tachyon in open string field theory. And their computations hold for any theory that has central charge 26, in particular for this one. And they found that there is a stable minimum with mass equal to the tension of the brain if you roll to one side. And there is something bad that happens if you roll to the other side. So here, if you roll to one side, you sit here on the Fermi level. So the tachyon condensation in that case would be this D brain coming here to the Fermi level. And here going to infinity. So in some sense, one lesson we're learning here is that, in this particular context, this calculation that is done in open string field theory is taking into account the existence of this Fermi C. Okay. Well, I'm just.
That also gives you an effective action, so it shouldn't be able to tell us what that looks like.
Yeah, here. That's right. But yeah, so what I. Right, right. Yeah, this is the open string tachyon. Well, yeah, no, that's right. Yeah, sorry. Yeah, this is a common.
How do you have. I mean this potential is an exact parabola.
Right.
So there should be no corrections to the.
No, no. Well, as I said, the open string field theory computation has corrections. In particular, it should have a minimum at one value. The parabola has no minimum. So if you were to do the open string field theory, the computation open string field theory was already done. So people already done that.
But very weak coupling, so the Fermi C is down. The sub-basement. There's no basement in California, whatever. And then for a long time,
right, right. Yeah, so then if, okay, so that then, okay, we are going to get into that. So that means that we are displacing the tachyon by a small amount, okay? The open string tachyon by a small amount. Okay. When people computed this potential, they consider displacements of order one. Displacement of order one for tachyon means you are here.
Okay?
Okay.
So that's it.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay, yes. So I think your question, so here this coordinate is the eigenvalue coordinate, okay? Which is not equal to the phi coordinate. So we'll later talk a little more about it. But, well, they are roughly similar, but. I'm going to give you a more precise relationship, but. That's right. So yeah, that's right. So, but the point is there is a non-local relationship between this variable and the phi variable. This is so-called this leg pole factor and so on. So we'll see that in more detail later. Okay.
But the motion of the brain brings over all the calculus
Well, the open string spectrum here contains only one physical mode, which is the tachyon. It doesn't contain an additional mode for the motion of the brain. So when you look at this diagram, you only find the tachyon. There is no.
From the minimum climb.
Well, it should somehow be associated to the tachyon mode. So when you do the exact Schwarzschild analysis, you find one physical mode, and the short answer is I don't really know how to describe the brain that is not that is sitting at arbitrary values of phi and is time dependent. So I don't know how to describe that. So maybe that's some other kind of boundary state. But okay.
Naively, you might have thought that the brain sitting at phi equals infinity was tensionless.
Right, right, that's naively you would say that.
Mm-hmm. So naively would have said this whole formalism doesn't make any sense.
Right.
But you say that this diagram tells you that's not true. You really have a finite tension, even though the thing is sitting at phi.
Right. Mm-hmm. That's right. Mm-hmm. Yes? Yes.
And the string field theory calculation, you find the Donner string field theory calculation?
Yeah.
So in some sense, that's a correct calculation classically, but in the bosonic theory, there should be quantum corrections, right? At least on string field theory side.
In principle, yes. Yeah, that's right.
But in superstring, you expect it to be exact, but in the bosonic theory, you expect it to be higher order correction. To what extent are you taking the classical part of the calculation on the vehicle?
Well, the classical limit corresponds to very large mu. So that's.
So this calculation.
Would be correct to leading order in mu. If you wanted to do a comparison, you would have to take that into account.
The quantum corrections on the string field theory side correspond to corrections in mu.
That's right. In 1 over mu. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. So roughly speaking, the mu is equal to 1 over the string coupling. Okay. And this should be viewed as a string coupling at the position where phi is of order, where the dilaton is of order one. Sorry, where this term is of order one. Now what Berlinde and McGreevy suggested was that if you have many of these D-brains, now you consider putting a large number of these somological D-brains, then the matrix, the field theory describing these D-brains is going to be precisely that matrix model that we have over there with one little minor change, which is that we have a gauge theory now. So it will be this with some potential here. And now you can... suppose you start with this configuration and you somehow put some cutoff here, and you take a large number of these D-brains, and then you let them decay, you compute with this potential, what will happen is that they will fill this Fermi C, and if you take a double scaling limit again, now around this maximum, you'll get exactly the same. Here you'll only be sensitive to the quadratic piece, and you'll take so you'll get precisely the same description that we started with. So we'll, from the matrix model side, we'll have fermions moving in an inverted harmonic oscillator potential. And from this side, we expect to get, again, the Liouville theory. Yes?
The existence of these D-brains depends on the action of the thing all the time.
Yes.
Yes.
Are you asking about this action?
Yeah.
Yes. No. Yeah. Okay. So no, the existence of this D brain is a property of the Liouville theory. So here you can have other central charges, for example, C less than one. So these D brains exist for all C.
The Liouville theory is now C equals to 25. Suppose that I reduce this C
Yeah, formally this dibrain exists. All formulas are analytic in the, so here there is some coefficient Q. They're analytic in this coefficient Q. So they exist for all values of Q. Well, there are problems when there is one parameter here called B, and Q. Well, I'm just being a little short. When B is real, then the central charge of the Liouville theory is bigger than 25, and you can. People have discussed continuing it to imaginary, whatever. So it's not clear how to deal with it. But so the formulas are analytic in this parameter B. And in particular, when central charge is bigger than 25 of Liouville theory, there everything is real and all these formulas make sense. And in fact, there was a paper by Kasakov, Kutasov, and I'm forgetting what, Kostov? Yeah. And they showed that these CC brains, indeed, they computed the tension for these CC brains, and they show that they indeed give correctly the non-perturbative corrections to the matrix model results. So here, in what I'm been discussing here, so when you take the CC brain, you can tensor it with Neumann boundary conditions in the time direction, or with Dirichlet boundary conditions in the time direction. So far, I've been talking about this one here. I probably should have specified that, but the instantons are related to taking it with Dirichlet boundary conditions in the time direction, and the instanton corresponds to the instanton corresponds to this trajectory. So going back, going to here, and then back to the Fermi C. So it's sort of like it is a bounce trajectory. So it's describing the decay. So half of that is the amplitude for decaying. And the whole action of the instanton is the probability for decaying. And so you can, this has been done for all C less than 1 in the bosonic theory. And the answers all agree up to sort of some overall coefficient that nobody computed. Yeah. Well, they did it for C greater than 25. Okay, and smaller or equal than 26. Okay.
This is an interesting one. This is a vivid portrayal of the difference between the lambda coordinate and the phi coordinate.
Right.
The instanton is the delta function.
Right.
Time in the Liouville question.
Right. Right.
Okay, but in the eigenvalue presentation, it lives for a finite time.
Right.
So this is a indication of the lack of. Locality
that's right. That's right. And this, I think there is both this locality in phi
right.
that is funny, and also the locality in x.
Right. Because yeah. Here you have
that's yeah. That's right.
X,
that's right.
Whereas in the phi presentation, you have delta function.
Right. That's right. Exactly. Yeah. So it's non-local in both coordinates. Yeah. Well, it is clear that the phi coordinate is and lambda coordinate are non-local, but I think Steve is also pointing out that even the time coordinate is somewhat non-local, because here this is extended of over a distance of order alpha prime in the time coordinate, in the Euclidean time coordinate,
but if you do the calculation, in
string theory it's localized, but of course we know difference. We can't really say when we get to distances of alpha prime, we can't really talk about locality. So everything is consistent. At first sight, there is a contradiction, but it's not really a contradiction.
No, it's really described. An instanton always describes a funneling event from one isn't going to plus. Whether it's local or not,
well. Yeah. Well, it's something for the alpha prime. Is that what you're asking?
Yeah.
There is no contradiction, so it's just. Okay. So now, one other thing that you can Okay, so now we've been discussing, we talked about the d-instant, and I should have mentioned that it's hard to compute the absolute value of the tension here, but you can compute the ratio of the tension of the d-instanton and the brain here, and they have the right tension to agree with this picture. So so now we'd like to understand the dynamical process of the decay of this d-brain. So this is an unstable d-brain, and we'd like to understand what happens when it decays. So in the matrix model, what happens is trivial. So this eigenvalue just moves to the right, and nothing else happens. So how do you describe this in the string theory side? We know that we add a term to the boundary action, some lambda, let's say e to the t. I guess maybe I should call it x naught. So this describes the decay of... So this is on the boundary of the worksheet. So this describes the condensation of this open string tachyon. And you can you compute. OK, I think I ran out of time. I don't know what happened. OK, I'm going to skip this because you. Oh, OK. Oh, OK. Well, would you like to hear details of this, or do you prefer to? Yeah, OK. Okay, so what we'd like to do now is to we can compute the emission. We can compute the emission of closed strings. So we naively expect to that this d-brain should decay to closed strings. So we can compute the emission of closed strings, and this can be computed by inserting the closed string vertex operator. In our case, the closed string vertex operator is the tachyon. So what we need to compute is this in the time conformal field theory. The computation factorizes into two pieces. This is the vertex operator for the tachyon, and it factorizes into two pieces. This should be computed with the CC brain. So some homologicals tell us what the answer is. So this is sine hyperbolic pi p times some phase, which depends on p. So that's this answer. And this was also computed. And you get sine hyperbolic pi e, and so on. OK? So here, I mean, in order to compute this, you need to compute this on a disk with this boundary interaction. OK, but here, since this particle is massless, E is equal to P, so this just gives us 1, essentially 1 times up to this phase, e to the I delta of P. OK? So now, sorry?
No, the
V-brain
somehow. It's not 1
V-brain. OK, yeah, I've gloss over that fact. Here we are always talking about the so-called 1-1 CC brain. I don't know the interpretation of the other CC brains. I don't remember it, but I think you get the higher power here. I bigger, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, both things would be needed. I mean, the other CC brains have a more tachyonic tachyon, so some tachyon that is even more tachyonic than the usual tachyon. So this computation also would have to be, this computation would also be different. So it might well be that it gives the same answer. I don't know.
But can you remind us why they rejected those?
They didn't. Everybody else.
They said that they didn't agree with some semi-classical computations. So if you take well, what they did is the following. What they really said is that they don't know what their semi-classical interpretation is. So they took this hyperbolic space that we talked about before, and they computed some amplitudes using the semi-classical expansion around the worksheet we discussed, and they found that they didn't know how to get them to agree. So
what's the notation you're using?
This is the notation they used. So, well, I could talk a little more about this if you want, but no, you don't want. Okay. Well, maybe I will say a few words. So, the brains in this Liouville theory end up working like in a rational conformal field theory. In a rational conformal field theory, brains have some Cardy state that is associated, that is labeled by some primary field. So, the primary fields of Liouville theory are the tachyons, the usual normalizable tachyons. Those give the FCC brains. But in addition, there are some discrete states. These discrete states give these brains. This is the lowest discrete state. This is the identity. So if you take the identity operator, you get this brain. So that's sure that's.
So this corresponds to SU2
representations? I'm not sure if SU2. Well, I don't know about SU2. Yeah, roughly, yes, I'm not sure. Yeah. Sorry?
Yes, that's why
I didn't hear. Well, anyway.
Ah,
they are discrete. Yeah, they are labeled by two integers. Well, I don't want to really talk about that. okay, so.
So you shouldn't talk about it.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I should have followed your advice. Okay, so. So we have this. So the emitted closed string state has the form. So, of course, we have the disk diagram, but we can have many disks and so on, and the net result is that you exponentiate the answer. And so you have some integral dp, square root of 2p. This is just trivial normalization factor, creation operator p, times this e to the I delta of p. So this is the final, this is the state in the closed string Hilbert space that has been created. Now, this looks very much like e to the I. Well, this looks e to the I t tilde, where t tilde is some field whose creation modes are this combination acting on the vacuum. And the number here can be computed. So you can actually compute this number by considering the annulus diagram as familiar. And you determine this number. And this number is precisely the free fermion, the bosonic. Well, this is the coefficient such that this is a fermion. Okay, so this is a fermion at zero acting on the vacuum, or at some position x acting on the vacuum. Okay, so this is the answer that you get in string tree level. And this is an answer that has a divergence, because if you compute the norm of this state, you'll find that it's infinite. So basically, you have the when you compute the norm, it's just the fermion at the origin. And so that will give you an infinity. But we know this is not the right answer. So from the matrix model point of view, this answer corresponds to taking a wave function, which is a delta function. Okay, but the correct wave function is some more extended sort of wave function. And so here we'll end up, so this will depend on some variable. Let me call it lambda. And we'll have to integrate d lambda times some function of lambda, and this will give a normalizable state. Okay. And so this lambda should be basically the lambda that we're talking about here, is the tachyon field, or the initial value of the tachyon field. So I think this is telling us a lesson for deep brain decay in higher dimensions. So this divergence was present also in the in 26 dimensions. In 26 dimensions, what happened was that this was of order 1, but there was an infinite number of states. Well, no, not an infinite, a growing number of states, and the growth was had this form. Here, we don't have this growth, but we have the same divergence.
Sorry, you're saying divergence in the 26-dimensional
brain? Yeah, it's exactly. It's like in free, it's like free fermions. Yeah.
Can you actually see them?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Surprisingly.
For anything.
For anything. No. Sorry. No. This is for D0 brains. For D0 brains, it works like this. For other DP brains, then there are other factors of volume, and it doesn't. In some cases, this doesn't diverge. And there are other problems with those computations, but. Okay. So. Okay, but the lesson is that once we include the wave function of the of the original tachyon, we'll get something finite. And furthermore, from this computation, we know that this wave function should contain sort of a piece which is just the energy above the Fermi level, right? Some oscillating piece. And this oscillating piece, even in the higher dimensional cases, you could think that it comes from evaluating the classical action, the classical Bornifel action piece for the brain. So if you, with the same technique that you compute this one-point function, you compute the disk diagram. So I think it was described, there was a paper by Larsen and Tarashima. What was your color? Yeah? What?
Nagui,
yeah, Tarashima. They computed this diagram by doing this expansion. You can compute it without this insertion, and you can then compute the value of, for example, the boundary string field theory action. And what you get here is that this goes like e to the I, the mass of the brain times log of lambda. And this is the phase you need for energy conservation. So if you include this phase and you take this state that you get from the disk diagram, you get something that is normalizable and has the right features to be the closed strings produced by the brain. Now, is this computation going to be correct in higher dimensions? We are somehow here balancing this three-level term with this is which is basically something like one loop. There might be other corrections in the higher dimensional case. It's not clear, but it's interesting that this kind of mechanism is what makes this two-dimensional case work in the proper way. Okay, so I think this is this you could view as a nice lesson that we learned from this, from the two-dimensional case for the
lesson is that it works.
The lesson is that it works, yeah. And that the lesson is that the deep brains decay into closed strings. Okay. Okay, so now, of course, we can have eigenvalues that are on top of the barrier, below the barrier, and this can be done if you have here, you write here cosine x naught and some lambda here, and varying this lambda, you can have it above, and you can even have it below if you continue analytically in this lambda. When you have it below, what you get is if you analytically continued Sen's formulas. So, for example, Sen had some formula for the energy as a function of some lambda tilde. When you do the continuation corresponds to going below, you get negative energies. But that's somehow the fermion that has energies below this Fermi surface. So this energy you compute in string theory is always energy relative to the Fermi level. So these are negative energy states. So they should be holes. And so in order to describe the holes, you just take the boundary states that you get from this construction, and you just reverse the sign of the boundary state. So you take the boundary state, and you reverse its sign. Okay. So this is normally, you normally don't do this, because you say, well, you get negative tension, whatever. But here, starting from something that's negative, you reverse the sign, you get something positive. And I should say that normally, the phase, you cannot change the phase of Cardy states arbitrarily, because you would, the open string spectrum would not make any sense. Okay, but here, if you change the sign, all that happens is that some open string, the one loop diagram for some open strings, gets a minus sign. That sign is that they become fermions. This is one interpretation. So it's not something totally illegal. No. Yes. Exactly. So here we saw that. So the leading term is diversion. And then, what? Yeah, the matrix model will be exact, but you need some more data. You need to know the wave function of the initial state. And once you put in the wave function, you get something finite and very nice.
Okay, so the matrix model here is essentially getting all the quantum
regressions. Right. Yeah.
To make the comparison between speculation and order, you have to know what initial wave function.
Yeah, you need to. So in string theory, we wouldn't be able to do this computation to next order unless we specify the wave function. And we need to learn how to do that. This is something we don't, well, at least I don't know how to do. Right, we will be, well, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, you don't need, yeah. To get something that looks qualitatively like this, all you need to do is to think about some kind of collective coordinate quantization. So you quantize, the D-brain has a collective coordinate, which is this lambda, and you put the wave function for it. This is really all you need. Now, if you want to do a more precise comparison, you'll have to compute more things, because the wave function we specify here for lambda, and it needs to be translated to the wave function at infinity, and that, so that will involve lots of one over mu corrections.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, it decays only into the massless modes, but this high energy behavior of the mode is of the decay is exactly the same. There's exactly the same diversions. Yeah, corresponds to free fermions. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, it's not a surprise. It's well. I think if you understood better how to, so Sen has been saying that instead of viewing this as you can of course view this as a D-brain decaying into closed strings, but you can also view this as describing the closed strings from using the D-brains. And so he's thinking that, if we understand how to, at least in this case, it sounds like a good place where one can translate, one can see closed strings from the open string field theory description.
But you don't really have a complete description of
I don't really understand very well this point of view, so I
well, the
you probably
a conservative formulation,
yes,
which includes the closed string.
Yeah.
Right, but what you would want on the other side is
this is what we were describing before, right? So you put all the brains there, and you get some action for them, which is this matrix model, and it's the same matrix model that we're discussing. So. You see, if you take two D brains here, and they will have some action, right? Which is this is an SU2 gauge theory. Now you diagonalize it to the two eigenvalues. They became anti-commutant by that process because you get some van der Mond determinant. Okay, so when you start treating them, these become fermionic. So they are automatically fermionic. The gauge theory living on them implies that they will be fermionic. I mean, this is the computation of the standard sequel to one,
no.
The standard matrix model computation. Yeah, you know very well. Yeah.
I don't understand the statement that theory of free fermions makes sense with an empty turning C. And there's the idea of starting with all of the eigenvalues at the top of the potential.
Yeah, in order to make sense, you need to put some kind of cutoff. And then you say you are going to fill. Well, I don't know exactly how to make this wall rise here. Presumably some deformation of this Liouville theory that makes this wall rise. I don't know what it is. But suppose you do that. Then when they condense, then you need to take a double scaling limit to get back to the quadratic potential. Mm-hmm.
I think that's...
Right. You could do that, yeah. That's right. No, nobody has done that, yeah. So I think that's, if one wants to understand how closed strings come from open strings, this seems to be an interesting system where to understand. So, but that open string field theory, one point is that the open string field theory has already, I mean, it's already sensitive to the Fermi C. Okay, so that's one point I want to stress. You will not find just simply the quadratic potential by doing the open string field theory. Okay, so I guess all. Now we okay. So now the question is, what happens when we fill the two sides? So we are now interested in taking exactly the same matrix model, but instead of filling only one side, we fill the two sides. Now, this tachyon decay story would now the potential for the tachyon would be symmetric if you were to compute in open string field theory somehow. It should be symmetric, and we know of one case where it's symmetric, which is the superstring. So it's natural to conjecture that this will be some superstring background. Okay. Okay. So what superstring background can it be? Well, it has to be just by analogy with the previous one. We can just take the n equal to 1 version of everything here. So we have n equal to 1 Wall-Street supersymmetry. And so we have some Lagrangian d phi squared plus mu psi left, psi right, e to the phi. Well, of course, the kinetic term for psi, et cetera. Plus other terms. So this is n equal to 1 super Liouville. Yeah. Left and right. Yeah. So in fact, this is going to be type 0 theory. So we're only going to impose the minus 1 to the f left plus right projection. We're not going to impose separately the left. Because if we did that, in a type 2 theory, we cannot have tachyon. So if we want to have this tachyon wall, we need to be in type 0. OK, so what's the spectrum of this theory? The spectrum of this theory is, again, it has a massless tachyon, so that's the same as in the bosonic theory. And in addition, the 0B theory has a Ramon-Ramon scalar, which we'll call C. And the 0A theory has no propagating modes, but it has two gauge fields, F plus and F minus. Okay, so these are Maxwell fields, two forms, and there are two of them. So the 0B model is the natural candidate for this one because it has two scalar fields, one corresponding to oscillations of the Fermi C in one side, and the other one oscillations of Fermi C in the other side. Okay. So the tachyon will be symmetric combinations and the C field anti-symmetric combinations. Okay, so we can now in this superstring we can discuss. In order to see whether this makes a little more sense, let's try to discuss the D brains and see if they match the picture we have. Of course, in order to derive this, the nicest thing to do would be to just start from the Feynman diagrams that give this, and from the Feynman diagrams discover that we really have an n equal to 1 supergravity in the Wall-Street. So that would be nice to do. We haven't done that. We attempted, but we got confused. What?
Well,
I mean, it's so when you do the Feynman diagrams, you get a very sort of geometrical. You get, in a way, a gauge invariant description of the Riemann surface. A lot of what appears here is not gauge invariant, and so in particular, all this stuff with the fermions and so on. In the end, these are gauge symmetries. So they are not going to directly appear in terms of the Feynman diagrams. And so it's a little confused. What's the gauge invariant description of a super Riemann surface? I don't know. Maybe this is a problem that people consider. I don't know. But, Yeah, I think it should probably be doable. It's just that we didn't know how to do it.
Is there any evidence you're getting anything that looks like this is really
well? I mean, if you start, I mean, qualitatively yes, because you have two minima, so you have something like with two minima, and if you have this, you expand around these two points, the gauge group got broken into two pieces. There are somehow some ghosts that have anti-commuting properties. Maybe they give rise to this Walshid. But I mean, there are some fermions in the description, but all this is very vague. I mean, it's not.
So it's not so obvious where that.
Yeah, no, I agree. I don't say it's obvious. I just said I didn't know how to do it.
I don't see where that comes out.
Yeah. Maybe, yeah. I don't really want to discuss this because I don't understand it. So I think I'd better tell you something I understand. But so maybe we can, some of you can figure out how to do it. So I think it would be nice to have a nice derivation. Then you wouldn't have to work too hard doing many comparisons. You just derive it, and that's it. okay. So now let's discuss this CC brains. So in type zero, there are two kinds of brains. There are, because the Walshid supercurrent can obey this kind of boundary condition, the boundary, where eta could be plus or minus 1. Okay? And so there will be brains that obey this with plus 1 and brains that obey this with minus 1. Now, of course, this type of the sign of eta can be changed by taking psi left into minus psi left for all the fermions and not changing psi right. That changes the sign of eta. In the type 2 strings, this is a symmetry, and in fact, we gauge it. So whenever we get some brain of a superstring, we are actually summing over these two types of brains. But in type 0, we don't. So these are two distinct brains. And in type 0, this can or cannot be a symmetry. If it is a symmetry, like in 10-dimensional type 0, then the two brains will have similar properties. If it's not a symmetry, like in our case, it's not a symmetry because here, if we change this sign, then the sign of this term is changed. And so that's not a symmetry. And so the two brains could have different properties, and they do have different properties. In particular, the CC brain has only one sign of eta. So there's only one kind of CC brain. Okay. So that's one technicality. And we really needed that because, here we have this matrix mold. It's just this single matrix. There are no two kinds of matrices, whatever. So now, then again, we can talk about the
last statement? There's only one kind of brain?
Yeah, there is only one kind of CC brain. One kind. And now, depending on whether we have Neumann, so we can have Neumann boundary conditions, and this will be, or we can have Dirichlet boundary conditions. So the ones with Dirichlet boundary conditions are really charged. They have Ramon-Ramon one-point functions. These don't. These are uncharged. And these, again, have a tachyon. So the open string theory living on these ones is exactly the same as the one we talked about before. Okay. These ones are, well, as they come with these two charges, and what they correspond to is they correspond to an eigenvalue going in one direction, that's one charge, the eigenvalue going in the other direction, that's the other charge. And indeed, the tension difference between these ones and these ones have just the right properties. Okay. Now, this will couple to the C field with some number here, and if you define the periodicity of the field C field through this coupling, so in such a way that the action of the D instanton doesn't change, you find that the C field is at the self-dual radius. Okay. So the C field is a two-dimensional. This should not be. This is not a worldsheet. A field that lives on the worldsheet. This is a field in space-time, and this field in space-time is at the self-dual radius.
This field is scalar.
This is a scalar. So normally Ramon-Ramon scalars are periodic. And we normally determine the period by looking at the instanton contribution. So here we are just doing exactly that. And we find, we are just what I'm telling you is a statement of what the period is. Yeah, yeah, with Dirichlet boundary conditions, that's right. A D instanton, that's right. Mm-hmm. Okay, so you can. Well, you can repeat the same tachyon decay story that we discussed before. Here it can go into two directions, depending on the sign of lambda, where lambda was this parameter that Sen had. And the computation is exactly the same. And what we find is also for the C field, we have a constant amplitude. So for the NS amplitude is 1 times e to the I delta NS of p. And the Ramon-Ramon amplitude. So this is an NS field. This is the Ramon-Ramon scalar. So it's 1 times some phase delta Ramon-Ramon of p. And this is actually lambda over the absolute value of lambda. So the sign here depends on the direction in which we roll. And so the fields describing the oscillations on the two sides are these combinations b plus or minus, which is the tachyon. So with some momentum p is the tachyon with momentum p e to the I delta of p and s. Plus the C field of P e to the I delta Ramon-Ramon of P. Okay. So the transformation between the fields. So in the bosonic string, we just had this, and we had only one field. And this phase is this non-local transformation we're talking about. This factor here is so-called leg pole factors. And this is some ratio of gamma functions. So if you go to Euclidean momentum, there are some poles, whatever. In Lorentzian signature, this is just a pure phase with no singularities. Okay. Now, people have, DiFrancesco and Kutasov, some years ago, computed the scattering amplitudes of these fields at tree level, and they found that they decoupled. So V minus Q is equal to zero if P and Q are both non-zero. Okay. What this is saying is that really the excitations living on one side decouple from the excitations of living on the other side, and they only couple through the instantons. And indeed, if you consider the instanton, this there can be a two-point function of b plus and b minus. Okay.
This is special to 1 plus 1 dimensions. I need to load it to the two-dimensional type 0 string.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Right.
So this result is perturbative type 0.
Yeah. Yeah. This is a result. Well, this result was only proven at tree level, but we expect it to be true to all orders in perturbation theory. Yes?
So, can you estimate the contribution
to this correlator from the instanton of 1 to 0 point function on this point? The exact expression is not known, as far as I know. I mean, people.
What?
Right, so normally the way these things are done is you use factorization and you write some integral expression and so on. It's expected to be true. So this is only true, proven to be true at string tree level. Well, it's not obvious. I mean, it's really not obvious because B plus Q, whatever, this is non-zero, right?
What's the difference between
plus and minus? Plus and minus is, this plus and minus. Mm-hmm. Okay, so yeah, this is, there is an argument for proving this using the chiral ring and so on. But yeah, I don't see. There must be some kind of simple argument that what should happen is that the whole amplitudes. Well, this is non-zero and is equal to the bosonic string answer. Okay. So there should be some argument purely based on the worksheet that takes this n equal to one superstring. We do something and we get two copies of the bosonic string. I mean, this in principle should be doable, but I don't know how to do it. Yeah, yeah. This is something we should be able to do for this case. Yeah. That's right. I mean, yeah, they use this analyticity argument.
Is there any understanding of what this tunneling means in a gravitational language?
Well, it's the contribution from the instantons. I'm not sure. Right? So there are amplitudes, there are fields that don't interact in perturbation theory, but they do through instanton effects. Okay, so now one other amusing thing is that is the following. So you can take this configuration and you can raise the Fermi level above the potential. So this is like changing mu to minus mu, and we said here it was the same as changing lambda psi left to minus psi left. So if you change mu to minus mu, sorry, I erased. There was one with size, right? In the Liouville action, we have mu psi left psi right e to the phi. So changing mu to minus mu is the same as changing psi left to minus psi left, and so this should have the same properties as the theory that we have over here. And in fact, Gross and Klebanov argued some years ago that these two should be exactly the same. And the simplest way to view this is to think about it in phase space. So if you think about it in phase space, lambda and p, so below, so here we are filling this. So that's below the potential. Above the potential, what we are doing is we're filling this whole region here. And if you think about, if you replace now all the fermions by hole and all the holes by fermions, you'll get the same answer up to some minus sign. And so that's the same as filling this region here. And not filling the region here, but that's exactly the same as what we started with. So and indeed, and this is valid to all orders in mu. Okay, it's an exact relationship. It is valid non-perturbatively. Yes. In the matrix model, yes. So this argument that, well, there are different ways of describing the argument, but we can discuss it later. I mean, it is valid. So, to remind, there are some, all the answers are determined in terms of some phase shifts, right, that you computed. And the answers have the form some gamma functions of this type. The phase shift is something like this. So when you change mu to minus mu, All that happens is a minus, some trivial minus sign that, okay? Okay, so now let's discuss a little more the zero, let's see, zero B case, I think, more or less discussed. Oh, okay, so there is a nice story with the one loop partition function. So one can compute the, so there is the exact answer for the full partition, thermal partition function that was computed many years ago by Gauss and Klebanov. And one can expand that in powers of mu. And an interesting term is the term that would correspond to Wolfschitz with the topology of the torus, which appears as a log mu term. And this has some coefficient, 1 over 24 r plus 1 over r. And so the idea is, well, can we match these coefficients? So to be a little more okay, in the bosonic string, it matches if you divide the, if you only fill one side. In the superstring, you just multiply that by 2. And there is some rescaling of alpha prime, because here the curvature of the potential is 1 over 2 alpha prime, and not 1. This is just something trivial. So when all that is done, so you get something of the form 2 alpha prime square root of 2 alpha prime. So that's the form we want to match. And when you compute the You can do the computation here of these one-loop diagrams, and the Liouville potential, this term, first of all, the coupling to the dilaton doesn't matter because the Wolfschitz has zero curvature. And then this term just provides a cutoff for the phi direction that gives the log mu term. And the rest is just a free field theory computation of a torus diagram in a thermal background that Cho did many years ago. And so and what happens is that there are different spin structures, plus, minus, whatever. So all the pluses and minus here. And there's one that is special, which is the plus plus, which has fermion zero modes. And then there are the other three. So in all these other three, all the fermion determinants, boson determinants, they all cancel. All that is left is the sum over winding modes and momentum modes of the scalar field x. So you do that computation. And then you find for that some answer, which is some number here of the form r plus 1 over r. And here square root of alpha prime. So it doesn't have the form we want. So that's these three spin structures, the even spin structures. It, of course, has the r to alpha prime over r duality, the duality of the scalar field, because that's what we okay, so somehow in order to match that, we need that this gives us some contribution. Now, what should this contribution be? Okay, so let's first argue what it should be, and then try to say to compute it. Well, first of all, this term in the partition function always matches with the thermal computation in the target space. So if we have one scalar field, we can compute the free energy of one scalar field, and that should match with this. And this was shown in general by Cho in this paper where he computed this. Okay, so in our case, we have two scalar fields, so and this the coefficient here doesn't match. So by consistency with the space-time picture, we expect here a 1 over r with some coefficient. So this coefficient is now determined by saying that it should match. So that's one property we expect. Now, the other property we expect is that in the 0a or 0b picture, there should be a plus or minus sign here. And that's what distinguishes 0a and 0b. Also, if you do a t-duality, 0a and 0b are exchanged. And t-duality is exchanged in 1 to 1 over r. So here, we should get minus r over alpha prime. Well, let's say alpha prime to 1. So we expect an answer like this. And indeed, by just determining this coefficient and these properties, we get the precise answer here. Okay. Now, one can go ahead and try to understand why this is non-zero more directly. And so if you're interested in the details, well, you can, I guess, go to our paper. So the basic point is that there are two fermion zero modes, the psi phi and psi left, and psi x, Okay? But there are also ghost zero modes of beta and gamma. So this give infinities, give, this give zeros, and they basically cancel. So, so what we did was to show that it's non-zero. We did not compute the precise numerical coefficient, which in any case you can determine by this consistency with the space-time argument, and therefore it should work. Now, of course, this same argument tells us what the answer should be for 0a. So for 0a, we get some answer which has a 2 here and a 1/2 here. So the 1/2 is this here, which has the t-duality, r to 1 over r duality. And OK. OK, so that's the 0a answer. So the question is, what's the matrix model for 0a? So here we, well, we were confused a little bit at first because our first naive idea was, well, you have the two sides, the now one way to view the 0a model is to say the 0b model divided by minus one to the f left spacetime. This is different from the f left I was talking about before, which is the f left on the worksheet. This is the f left in spacetime. So this is a relationship that holds in 10 dimensions. But also, here you change the sign. This is the changing the sign of the Ramon-Ramon sector. So and this operation, this is a symmetry of the theory of the 0b model, which basically reflects these two sides. So we thought at first that, well, it's just the symmetric wave functions. If you do that, it will not match that answer. But the correct way to do this is not to do this reflection symmetry at the level of the eigenvalues, but to do it at the level of the matrix model itself. So you start with your matrix model, which had m dot square plus v of m. And now we do this C2 symmetry. So this C2 symmetry changes m to minus m, and the gauge field leaves it the same. And as whenever we are doing some quotients, it's sometimes used, there are fractional brains, and they are related to doing this quotient that accompany we, at the same time that we do this quotient, we do a gauge transformation. The sigma is some element, it's the C2 embedded in the gauge group. And well, this sigma could be something like 1, 1, 1, 1, minus 1, minus 1, minus 1, and there could be n of them, and n plus q of them. And when you follow these steps, in the end, you're left with a un cross u n plus q matrix model, and a field, well, let's still call it m. It's not the same as this m, but let's call it little m. Little m is bifundamental. Basically, somehow the off-diagonal components of this, and it's complex. And then you have a Lagrangian d not m dagger d not m plus some function. The potential, let's say, if we only consider this quadratic potential, is just this. Okay. So now you go ahead and you n times n plus q. So it's a rectangular matrix. We could consider the particular case Q is 0. So there it would be a square matrix. But in general, it's a rectangular matrix. OK. So this is the? No. This is not the supergroup version. So OK, so here we derive it by doing the quotient in the way that so if you have difference in a covering space, you can get to difference in the quotient by doing this construction. This is a general prescription that Douglas and Moore have given us, and we just apply this prescription. So these are these two fractional brains, and we have open strings going between the brains. In the supergroup, the gauge field has some fermionic components going between these two things, and here we don't have that. Okay. And the matrix also has various other components. So in this, yeah.
Here you have still two adjoints.
No, we don't.
The adjoints are gone.
Yeah.
Only the bifundamentals.
Yeah, only the bifundamentals. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So it's a different, but well, this is a different theory. It's not obviously related to what you are doing. Yeah, it is. Well, depends what you call the quiver, right? You don't need to have these arrows like that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So. What? Yeah, I think he was asking about matter fields in the adjoint.
Right.
Yeah. So this is just a quiver like this. I mean, the quivers you were considering also had that, but
yes.
I don't know the relation. You were also doing matrix integrals, not matrix quantum mechanics, so I'm not sure what the relationship is.
The matrix is complex.
Matrix is complex. Yeah. It needs to be complex in order to. There's only one matrix. This is M, and this is M, and this is M dagger. Sorry. Yeah, there's only one rectangular matrix. Okay, maybe. Okay, so when you have rectangular matrices, it again reduces to. Okay, before saying how to solve the matrix model, let me talk a little bit more about the CC brains in the 0A case. So in the 0A case, the CC brains with Neumann boundary conditions can be charged. They are charged under one of the two gauge fields, and we only have those. We don't have the other ones. They can be charged, and then we can have brains and anti-brains. So when you take the brain that is charged, there is no tachyon. And if you take the brain and the anti-brain, there is a tachyon going between the two. So this matrix model is the matrix model on n brains and n plus q anti-brains, right? So this is a D0, and these are D0 bars. Okay, that's this matrix model. Okay. Yes. Right. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Okay. So in general, when you are in 0B, the brains that carry charge are brains that have odd dimensions. So this is. This is due to the chirality condition with the Ramon-Ramon Ramon-Ramon vertex of spin fields. So only brains that have even dimensions can be charged on the Ramon-Ramon fields.
So under what is this Neumann brain charge?
Okay, so in the 0A model, I told you that there were two gauge fields, F plus and F minus. Now, this symmetry psi left to minus psi left, this Walshit symmetry, exchanges these two. Okay, it's not a symmetry. I shouldn't have called it a symmetry. This operation, yeah, this operation exchanges these two and exchanges also the sine of mu. Okay. Now, well, the brain, to the best of our knowledge, is not there. And I don't.
No.
Well, yeah. So in other backgrounds, there could be other brains. So here we are talking about this Liouville theory, 0A, whatever, and you add a brain there. So there, you cannot. The CC brain only comes charged under one of them. Now, I think what you have in mind is you could consider a background where the other gauge field is turned on. Okay, let me talk briefly about that. So you can write down a space-time action for these gauge fields. So there is they have the form f plus square plus f minus square, and there is a function of the tachyon in front. So here you have e to the t, and here you have e to the minus t. Okay. Now, so this is okay. So you have that, and. Now you can. It's t, yes. Mm-hmm. So in particular, when the sine of mu gets changed, the sine of t gets changed, and these two terms get exchanged. So this you can derive by doing a mini superspace analysis and so on. So, but you derive some space-time action of this form, and. Since t is diverging when phi goes to infinity, when you consider configurations with constant field strength, one of them will give an infinite action and the other one will give finite action. Okay. Correspondingly, the Ramon-Ramon vertex operators, one is normalizable in the phi direction, the other one is not, when you go to large phi. Okay. So if if you turn on the one for which the energy is finite, then it doesn't lead to a big change in the background. If you turn on, and that's the one that corresponds to the zero, to the deep brain we're talking about. If you turn on the other one, it presumably will give large change in the background. I'm not sure what it corresponds to. It probably is connected to this matrix model in some way, but I don't know what it is.
Okay.
As I said, there is only one type of brain. That doesn't. There are two gauge fields, so it could be that you turn on a gauge field that doesn't correspond to any brain sitting there. Well,
what is charge with the no charge?
There might be another type of brain we haven't discovered, but the standard CC brain is charged on only one of them.
So the standard CC brain is charged under the plus or the minus?
I think it's the plus. Yeah.
But it's conventional?
What? No, it's not conventional. It's the one such that you get finite energy. Okay, so now, and of course, when you change mu to minus mu, these two things get exchanged, the CC brain that exists where. Yeah. Okay. Now, you can analyze this matrix model. Well, maybe now that I'm describing the space-time action, I should say one more thing. Suppose we do this one-loop computation again. What we expect is that the free energy has the mu squared log mu, right? And that should be the same for 0a and 0b. But then this one-loop term should be different. And in particular, I told you about one difference, this factor of two. But in addition, once we have this q, we should get an extra contribution from these gauge fields. And this will lead to a constant energy density that will be cut off again by log mu. So there is here some term of the form rq squared with some particular coefficient. Okay, so the idea is can we get this complex matrix model to match with those quantities? And the answer is yes, so you can match them. Now, one more little thing about the complex matrix model. So you can say that basically you get again fermions, but the fermions move in a potential, which is the inverted harmonic oscillator potential with that mass term, plus something that looks like an angular momentum barrier. Roughly of this form. I don't remember whether this was a plus or a minus, but anyway, so there is an angular momentum barrier there. And so it's not simply what we said before, that we just put a wall here. This wall is really, extends all the way to infinity, and so it really will change the perturbation expansion of the model. So as we said, already at one loop, we expect to find some contribution. And indeed, there are further contributions at higher loops. OK. There is some barrier. When you actually do the computation, it looks very much like an angular momentum barrier. But if you do the one by one, what? Q squared, and this is a 1/4. Plus or minus 1/4. Sorry, not without the square. It's 1/2 squared, sorry. okay, so that's what you get. And when you do this same phase shift computation that Greg did, and you compute the free energy, and then you expand it, so you can get the exact expression for the free energy. But then you can expand it, and you get this answer with the factors of two and the correct factor here, and so on. Okay. Now, I think that there will be probably many interesting things to do with this, like that you can do with this. For example, there is a Toft limit you can take of taking very large q, and you get some answer. I mean, I'm Not sure what that corresponds. Maybe it has some interpretation, some direct, more direct matrix model interpretation, where you only take the fields living on the on these Q D brains in the Liouville background, and then you do the large Q Toft limit. But I mean, naively, you would think that this should give you just the volume of UN because there is nothing living there. But the answer is not that volume. It's a complicated answer, function of the Toft parameter. So it should be a more complicated theory. I don't know what really is. But okay, so I guess I ran out of time. So I probably should finish here. Let me see if, let's see what. Well, now what? So I think that there are probably more connections to be found here. It would be nice to find a connection to what Robert was discussing and how it fits with the topological string and so on. So that's one thing. It would be nice, of course, now that we have filled the two sides, would be nice to understand black holes and these kinds of processes. So we can now understand non-perturbative processes without fear that we'll get nonsense. So here we'll get something, and then we'll can try to find the black hole. And so I think the question everybody would like to understand is to understand the black hole. There is a two-dimensional black hole that is a solution of the space-time action. And it would be nice if it can be formed by the scattering. Of course, it's very confusing because at the level of fermions, we just have free fermions. But well, maybe there is a way to understand it. That would be, I think, a very, very nice thing if it can be done.
This Norton brain is the manual solution for space
time. Which brain?
The 0A Norton. It's the one with the charge of the F plus.
Well, that is sitting at phi equal to infinity. It doesn't move to phi, to other values of phi. At least we don't know what the boundary state is that moves.
You don't have two sides.
No, it only sits at infinity. It is consistent because, yeah. So there is this tension term that pushes it to infinity.
Yeah.
We should also mention that there is no pair creation because of this, again, this tension.
Mm. Have you
read about some kind of a government? No. Well, at least not. Yeah, Greg.
If you're looking for the black hole, the black hole will be formed in 1950K, right?
That's right. Yeah.
So it has to be in the analytic structure of the
S. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So some feature of the analytic structure of the
S. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, this was discussed, some of these aspects were discussed, right? I guess Joe wrote papers on understanding gravitational interactions from just simpler gravitational interactions, and he found that these leg poles are important, and
I think there's an argument in the original, the Bosonic version, about why you don't get black holes. And if I remember, basically what happens, you try to throw a tachyon in and it hits the strong coupled region and bounces off before you can make a horizon. And I'm a little concerned now that there might be something similar in even in the case where you have these remote moments.
Can you make a wave sufficiently big that it collapses before it gets to the...
My recollection is, I haven't looked at this for a long time, my recollection is that no matter what, it gets, the tachyon becomes strongly coupled before you make a horizon. And so you can't make a sharp prediction about what happens.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's interesting. I didn't know.
With this funny coupling of the tachyon to the Ramon field, I'm a little worried that the same thing will happen, but I haven't checked that.
Mm-hmm.
In these kind of like two-cut solutions of matrix models,
yes.
Every cut builds up its own little piece of this kind of dual space-time.
Mm-hmm.
So why don't you here have kind of two asymptotic regions corresponding to the sides of the world?
Um, Well, I'm not sure I agree with your first statement that, okay, that the two make separate space-time.
Well, no, in this case, separate regions. I mean,
well, two separate regions, yeah. So here the picture is that they build the same region, but two separate fields. So it's not clear which of the two. On the other hand, maybe the two regions is a little more intuitive because it correctly gives you the physics of the scattering amplitudes and so on. I don't.
What?